Diakonos not deacon. A 15-minute lesson. Section 1. The wrong word. For 2,000 years, one borrowed word has turned every believer into an audience and every servant into an officer. We call it the deacon. We imagine a man in a vestment, a trustee of the building, a member of the board, an ordained step on the ladder toward priest or pastor. But when the New Testament speaks of diakonos, it does not describe an office. It describes a function, a posture, a pair of feet kicking up dust as they run an errand. One word, one massive inversion. From a waiter at table to a title in a hierarchy. From a servant identity available to every believer to an ecclesiastical position reserved for an approved few. From a towel in a basin to a budget in a ballot. The problem is not just semantics, it is monopoly. When we use the word deacon, we import 17 centuries of clerical control that did not exist in the first century. We turned a universal calling into a gated institution. Section 2. What diakonos actually meant. In the Greek world, diakonos was not a religious word. It was household vocabulary, the kind of word a mother used when she told her son to run a message across town, the kind of word a host used for the slave who filled the wine cups and cleared the plates. The root means to kick up dust, to hurry on an errand, to wait at table. It described the lowest kind of service, menial, invisible, unpaid, the work of hands, not the work of robes. When Jesus said whoever would be great must be your diakonos, he was not offering a promotion. He was offering a towel. When he said the Son of Man came not to be served but to diakoneo, he was describing a basin of water and a floor full of dirty feet. Here is the critical distinction. The diakonos was not an office holder. He was a servant, not a subset of the church, not a rank above the laity, not a stepping stone to higher ministry. He was someone who ran, someone who washed, someone who served because that is what the kingdom looks like. When Paul called himself a diakonos, he was not claiming a title. He was claiming a towel. When he called Phoebe a diakonos, he was using the exact same word. When he called civil rulers diakonos in Romans 13, he meant they were God's errand runners, not his ordained clergy. The New Testament uses diakonos over 30 times. It uses it for apostles and angels, for women at the cross and men in government, for Jesus Christ and for household slaves. It never once uses it to describe a church board member. Section 3. The smoking gun. The English word deacon is not a translation. It is a transliteration. A sound borrowed from Greek, passed through Latin, and dropped into English with all its institutional baggage intact. Consider the evidence. The New Testament uses the noun diakonos roughly 30 times. English Bibles translate it as servant 19 times, as minister 20 times, and as deacon exactly 5 times. The same word, the same Greek letters, the same dust-kicking errand runner. But when it refers to household slaves at a wedding, we call them servants. When it refers to Paul and Apollos, we call them ministers. When it refers to Jesus Christ, we call him a minister. When it refers to civil rulers, we call them ministers. But when it appears next to the word bishop, suddenly the translators grow quiet. Suddenly the plowboy cannot be allowed to understand. Suddenly the servant becomes a deacon. Philippians chapter 1 verse 1. Paul writes to the saints in Philippi with the episcopos and the diakonos. Every Greek scholar knows both words describe functions, overseers and servants, guardians and errand runners. but the translators could not allow the people to read it that way. They had an office to protect, a hierarchy to preserve, a clergy to distinguish from the ordinary believer. So they transliterated. They smuggled in a Latin ecclesiastical word instead of translating a Greek household word. This is not translation. This is camouflage. Section 4. T. Wynne-D'Ailey and the King. William Tyndale knew the difference. In his English New Testament of 1526 and 1534, Tyndale never used the word deacon. It did not exist in his vocabulary as a church title. He translated diakonos consistently as minister or servant. In Philippians 1:1, Tyndale wrote to the elders and ministers. He knew that diakonos meant servant. He knew that episkopos meant overseer. He would not let the Church of England dictate his vocabulary. But the King James Bible, 1611, was commissioned by a monarch who believed that no bishop meant no king. King James I issued 15 rules to his translators. Rule number 3 demanded that the old ecclesiastical words be kept. The word church must not be translated congregation, and the word deacon must be inserted where the Greek says servant. The translators were Greek scholars. They knew what diakonos meant, but they were forbidden to translate it. They were ordered to preserve the threefold hierarchy of bishop, priest, and deacon that the apostles had never built. This was not a scholarly decision. It was a political decision to preserve institutional power, and we have been reading it wrong for 400 years. Section 5. The invention of office. The translators did not stop at transliteration. They added a word that does not exist in the Greek. 1 Timothy chapter 3. The King James Version says, "Let them use the office of a deacon." It says those who have used the office of a deacon well. But the Greek says no such thing. Verse 10. The Greek says, "Let them serve." It is the verb diakoneo, not a noun, not a title, not an office. Let them serve. Let them wait tables. Let them kick up dust running errands for the saints. Verse 13. The Greek says those having served well, a participle, a description of action, not a certificate of ordination. The word office was added by translators to create a position where Paul described a function. They turned a basin into a badge. They turned character into credentials. They turned service into status. And where did the office come from? Not from the New Testament. The seven men in Acts chapter 6 are never called deacons. The word diakonos never appears in that chapter. Stephen is called an evangelist. Philip is called an evangelist. They are never called deacons because Luke knew that diakonos was not a church title. It was a description of what they did. They served. The threefold ministry of bishop, priest, and deacon did not appear in the New Testament. It emerged slowly over centuries. Ignatius of Antioch, around 110, is the first to describe it clearly. By the Council of Trent, it was declared divine institution, but the apostles knew nothing of it. We did not just translate poorly. We replaced a word about universal service with a word about exclusive office, and then we built a wall around it. Section 6. The Phoebe Problem. There is one more deception hidden in the transliteration. It is the deception of gender. Romans chapter 16, verse 1. Paul writes, "I commend to you Phoebe, our sister, who is a diakonos of the church at Synchrea." The exact same word he uses for himself. The exact same word he uses for Apollos. The exact same word he uses for Timothy. Tyndale translated it faithfully. He called her a minister of the congregation. But the King James translators could not allow a woman to hold an office, so they demoted her. They called her a servant, not a minister, not a deacon, a servant, as if she were a household slave, not a recognized leader of the church. Modern translations have continued the game. Some call her a servant. Some invent a new word, deaconess, to create a separate and lesser category. But the Greek knows no such word. There is no feminine form in the New Testament. Diakonos is grammatically masculine and used for both men and women because in the kingdom, service is not gendered. It is human. This is the same pattern that turned Junia into Junias. The same pattern that translated Phoebe's other title, Prostates, as helper or benefactor instead of leader or ruler. When the word describes a man, he is a minister. When it describes a woman, she is a servant. When the word describes a man, he is outstanding among the apostles. When it describes a woman, she is erased or turned into a man. The transliteration of diakonos into deacon did not just create a hierarchy between clergy and laity. It created a hierarchy between male and female, and the text was twisted to protect both. Section 7. The Blood of Servants. Here is the spear point. The institutional church did not merely mistranslate this word. It murdered those who refused to accept the monopoly the translation protected. In the 12th century, Peter Waldo and his followers, the Waldensians, declared that every believer could preach and minister. They rejected the priesthood as a monopoly. For this, the Council of Verona condemned them. The Inquisition hunted them. In 1197, King Peter II of Aragon issued the first public decree prescribing death by burning for heresy. They were not burned for denying Christ. They were burned for denying that only ordained clergy could minister. In the 15th century, the Lollards followed John Wycliffe, who translated the Bible into English so the Plowby could read it. The English Parliament passed the Statute de Heretico Comburendo. In 1410, a layman named John Badby was stripped naked and boiled alive in a barrel for refusing to renounce the belief that ordinary people could know the Scriptures. Wycliffe himself, dead 44 years, was exhumed and burned. His ashes were thrown into the Thames. In 1415, Jan Hus was summoned to the Council of Constance under promise of safe conduct from the emperor. He was arrested, imprisoned, and burned at the stake for declaring that conscience belongs to God, not to the hierarchy. He died because he believed the church could not stand between the people and the word. In the 16th century, the Anabaptists rejected every clergy-laity distinction. They declared that every believer was a minister. Felix Mantz was tied up and drowned in the Limmat River in Zurich. They called it his third baptism. Michael Sattler was tortured and burned. The Martyr's Mirror documents 4,000 more. They were killed by Catholics and Protestants alike. Both sides agreed on one thing: the monopoly must be protected. The common thread is not heresy. It is hierarchy. None of these people were burned for denying the resurrection. They were burned for denying that a class of ordained men stood between God and the people. They were burned for believing that diakonos described every believer, not an ecclesiastical office. The word deacon is one brick in the wall that caged the church, and the blood of those who refused to kneel behind it is still on the mortar. Section 8. The Contrast. Here is how the first century diakonos differs from the contemporary deacon. Diakonos was a function. Anyone could be one. Deacon today is an office. Only approved men can hold it. Diakonos was universal. Paul called all believers to the work of diakonia. Deacon today is exclusive. It reserves service for an elite few and calls the rest laity. Diakonos was a towel and a basin. Jesus washed feet. Deacon today is often a board and a budget. He manages property. Diakonos was identity-based. You were a servant because you served. Deacon today is appointment-based. You are a deacon because you are ordained. Diakonos required character, dignified, not double-tongued, not greedy, faithful in all things. Deacon today often requires credentials, seminary, examination, institutional approval. Diakonos was the path to greatness in the kingdom. Whoever would be first must be your diakonos. Deacon today is a stepping stone to higher office. Deacon, then priest, then bishop. Early believers did not ask, "Are you ordained?" They asked, "Are you serving? Have you taken the towel? Have you washed the feet?" The diakonos was not a rung on a ladder. It was the ladder itself, and Christ was at the bottom holding the basin. Section 9, The Recovery. What would change if we stopped asking, "Who are the deacons?" and started asking, "Who is the diakonos in this city?" 3 shifts. 1. Language shapes identity. When we use the word deacon, we reinforce the idea that service is a special office for special people. When we recover diakonos, we see that every believer is called to kick up dust running errands for the kingdom. 2. The diakonos is not a position to be filled. It is a function to be performed. Jesus did not ordain deacons. He washed feet. He said, "I have given you an example that you also should do as I have done to you." The example was not a ceremony. It was a towel. 3. We are not a clergy and a laity. We are a priesthood of servants. Every believer under Christ's lordship is a diakonos. Every gift is given for service. Every hand is given for washing. Every foot is given for running. Jesus did not come to establish a hierarchy of holy offices. He came to establish a kingdom of servants, a colony of heaven's errand runners, called out from the world to wash feet, fill cups, and carry the good news to the least of these. The gates of Hades will not prevail against his ecclesia, but they might prevail against a church that forgot every believer was supposed to be a diakonos. Optional discussion questions. Why do you think translators chose to transliterate diakonos as deacon only in certain passages, while translating it as servant or minister everywhere else? What would it look like for believers in your city to function as servants rather than office holders? How does seeing yourself as a diakonos change how you approach your neighborhood, your workplace, and your family? Why do you think the institutional church has historically persecuted those who rejected the clergy-laity distinction? What would change in your community if serving replaced holding office as the primary mark of Christian maturity? End of lesson.